You should have your Bibles open to Romans 11, and we are in verses 16, 17, and 18 is what we're going to focus our attention upon. And this is a section where the mechanical means by which God is able to work with Israel in their program at one time, and then not work with them, break them off, graft in a wild olive tree, which is represented by us Gentiles being left alone. We were, you know, here's your circumcision at one point, here's your uncircumcision. We're without God in the world, without Christ, without God in the world, outside of the commonwealth of Israel, which isn't just the commonwealth of, it's the commonwealth of the fatness of the root and everything that Israel wasn't enjoying a commonwealth because of who and what they were, but because of what, you know, God was able to do by His Jehovahness and His grace. And so that's going to be the very simple illustration in which God's going to lay down in your thinking that He has a basis, a legal basis upon which He's going to deal with us Gentiles today. He's going to not deal with Israel. He's not going to work with them. He's not going to expect anything from Israel today, expect fruit from them, expect them to... God isn't expecting peace in Jerusalem, so I don't know why people are praying for it. But everybody seems to be praying for peace in Jerusalem, and when God Himself isn't even expecting that today. But then again, when was biblical accuracy really important to most Christians? So, especially when it comes to either a TV program getting money or selling cards or something like that. But this is the way God wants us to be thinking about it. And again, this is thinking that wasn't in our minds when all we knew was time past but now to come. This again is how our Father views what He's doing, and He wants us to view it that way for some very critical and important reasons that will come up later on. Well, with all of that in mind, as I said at the end of our last lesson, there's supposed to arise in your thinking when you look at this and you look at you know, I wish I could have got a picture of a tree even more scruffy and more pathetic than that one that I had right there. But really, the pathetic nature of you as a Gentile has to have some weight behind it. And that's why I did some time there to go back to like Leviticus and go back and see what the nations, the Gentile nations were like when God gave them over into the hands of the adversary for the adversary to just ravage over time. And you really were outside the commonwealth of Israel. You were not a citizen of God's heavenly kingdom. You were without Christ. All of those things that you were, and God now has grafted you into this cultivated place of special treatment by Him, that should really generate in your mind some sobriety, some soberness of thinking that comes out of all this. Really, following the sense and sequence and the way that, and I mean the sense and sequence of the way the information your Father gives you to think about dispensational thinking, the way He wants you thinking about it, and really, for the first time, as you've gone through your sonship orientation, your sonship establishment, your heart should become gripped with the enormous privilege of being not only in this dispensation of the grace of God, but really, your heart should be so gripped with the concept of God's tremendous mercy towards you. Because there wasn't anything in you that made Him go out there and graft you in here. Understand that. God wasn't perplexed. We know we could do this. We could go throw charts up here all night long. But you understand that if this dispensation of grace was never brought in, God would have continued with His program with Israel and been able to fulfill every promise, every covenant that He ever made with them, and do all that He was going to promise to do with them, and purpose to do and plan to do with them, to repossess it. In other words, God didn't come along with Israel and say, oh, you know, it's kind of like me when I used to try to build models before I got any coordination. You know, you got more glue all over the place. You know, I'd try to build model airplanes or something, and pretty soon I'd have a wheel that I accidentally laid in the glue, and then I dropped it and it stuck on the canopy, and now I've got glue all over the canopy, and the wheel's stuck on the top of the plane when it should be on the bottom, and it's just a mess. And what you want to finally do is just take the thing, throw it in the box, and throw it away. That's not what God did with Israel. He didn't come up along and say, oh, it's gotten so wacky with them that in desperation, I'm going to have to go to these guys. That's not what he did at all. Because the whole program is different today. And so you really are in a position where you're thinking, I shouldn't even be an afterthought in my father's thinking. And he's grafted me into this place of special treatment where I can enjoy the fatness of that holy root of that cultivated olive tree and the tremendous mercy that he's had upon me in doing that. You see this reflected in Paul's life. By the way, some of these things are the reasons why when you get to the end of chapter 11, all this wells up in the Apostle Paul, and he comes along with this fantastic flourish of a doxology to the magnificence of God's genius and his wisdom and his mercy, and all of these things come tumbling out. And Paul's not even a Gentile. And he sees that. And so you should have some deep appreciation for not just God's program with you and all that. That's good. But for God's dealings with both programs, that he hasn't abandoned what he was going to do with Israel. That would still leave the adversary a winner. If he goes up and repossesses the heavenly places, Satan still has the earth. If he still has the earth and doesn't repossess that, he still comes out. The vying for who will be the most high possessor of heaven and earth is still up for grabs. And so you should have, when you think on these things, and hopefully you think on them more than just in here, that you will begin to realize, lying under the surface almost, as it were, you start to uncover a deep appreciation for God's dealing with both programs and how needful they both are. Because you can't look at Israel without looking at what your future inner man is going to be. That's going to be your future inner man in the creature, where you provide the embodiment of the earth. But that means that there's appreciation for God's program with Israel to repossess the earth, and a just as equal appreciation for his program with us, the new creature, the body of Christ, to repossess the heavenly realm. So Paul cautions you in verse 18. That's why the caution comes out. Really, he cautions you from verse 18 all the way down through verse 24, and that just is the setup for the even greater warning of verse 25. For I would not have you ignorant, brethren, concerning this mystery, and so on and so forth. But look at verse 18. He comes along and he says, boast not against the branches, but if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee. Boast not against the branches. Notice that these five words form the five. Look at the English punctuation and grammar that you've got. These five words, even though the word boast is capitalized because it begins a new verse, but these five words, boast not against the branches, form the final phrase of a sentence that actually began back in verse 17. You see that? Verse 17 begins with the word and right after the period in verse 16. And you read on down through that big verse. Verse 17 is a pretty big verse, but it ends in a semicolon. And then you have the final phrase of that sentence, boast not against the branches. So let's read it with verse 17, the whole sentence. And if some of the branches be broken off, and thou being a wild olive tree wert grafted in among them, and with them partakest of the root and fatness of the olive tree, boast not against the branches. See? But look what the King James translators did. They took the final phrase of that sentence and made it the first part of verse 18. And that's ingenious. And that's because they understood things about grammar and English that very few people on this earth today alive understand. And by the way, this is one of the things that people get perplexed with the King James Bible about. You'll have grammarians who'll come along today and they'll say, well, there's some grammatical errors in the King James Bible. Yeah, if you go by the rigid rules of English grammar as they're set up today, there are. But that's not the same rules the King James translators were going by. The language had much more flexibility with prepositions, with who, whom issues, with things like that. And it was more pliable and more able to have greater power. When you start making a language rigid, you start losing some of its power to be able to express itself. And this is one of those instances where, yeah, it would have been more grammatically correct to make the whole verse, the whole sentence. But you have to ask yourself, why did they do that? What did they see there? They set those last five words off in verse 18, and by doing that, it draws your attention to that issue. It puts emphasis upon you not boasting against the branches. And the way you're you know, it's kind of an unusual way of breaking things apart. I think it is anyway. To my 21st century mind, it's unusual to break things apart like that. But they did it to emphasize you not boasting against the branches. And the way you're given the information is to come along and say, okay, after you get the importance and the effectual working of the greater part of the sentence in verse 17, then we have a semicolon. You pause there. After you get this in your thinking of what God did in grafting you in and all of that and what verse 17 says, once that's accomplished, it's almost like coming along and say, I say all that, to say this. This is what I'm driving at. And it's this: boast not against the branches. And that's the thrust, that's the bullseye of what I've been driving at with all the information about branches and the root and the fatness and the olive tree illustration. Don't boast against. You say, well, that sounds like a very oversimplified thing. Don't boast against the branches. Whoop-de-doo. That's the problem. It is a big, important, exciting issue. And it's so easy to come up to this and gloss over this and miss what's here due to the overshadowing aspect of this stupid chart and of the whole illustration of the olive tree and Israel and the Gentiles and the wild olive tree and all that stuff. It's so easy for that to overshadow this issue, but the issue he's actually been driving at. And the English language at that time had a marvelous way of being able to set things apart like that, and the translators did that. Boast not against the branches. That's what I've been driving at, and that's what I want you to see. My understanding is this is one of the major reasons and issues that our father's been driving at. And again, you won't fully get this to snap and click until you get later on in your sonship edification. That's why God leaves after chapter 11. He lays the thing aside, and then he'll pick it up and mention it one more time in Romans. And then later on, when you especially hit Ephesians and Ephesians 2, he's going to grab all of this and start unpacking it and start building upon it in some of the most marvelous ways that you can even, your mind hasn't even gripped yet. But one of the fundamental things that you and I have to be able to appreciate is what lies behind those five words: boast not against the branches. All right, let's at least get that much before we go. My understanding is, again, this is a major issue our father's driving at, and I say it's major because of the amount of information he dedicates to it after he concludes the illustration with those five words. He concludes the illustration, boast not against the branches. And actually, all the information that forms the remainder of verse 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, and I'm going to throw 25 into that as well, it all goes back to that phrase, and that warning, boast not against the branches. In other words, he says that little phrase at the end of the sentence there in verse, the sentence being verse 17 and 18, the beginning. But then everything he's going to say from there down, really through verse 24, and you could even include verse 25, because that's an even stronger warning and admonition about thinking dispensationally on a whole, comes from or points back to that issue of not boasting against the branches. So, let's peek underneath here and see what's at foot. Therefore, after the effectual working of the olive tree illustration has taken place from verse 17, our Father now gives us a healthy, I would call it, pretty healthy amount of caution here. All right? So like I said, you should be gripped with the fact that here I am, this scrub of a wild olive tree, left alone, unattended, just to grow and die without notice. And my Father has suspended the program of Israel and grafted me into a place of special treatment and blessing. And this is the beginning of the wheels turning of thinking dispensationally properly. And you're now thinking the way your Father views it and thinks about it. And He's going to begin utilizing you for a purpose He has never spoken of or revealed to anyone before, and has revealed this mystery through and to the Apostle Paul. Okay? So, after that effectual working of that illustration has taken place, he gives us a healthy caution and warning and proper doctrinal thinking concerning how it is you are to think dispensationally as his son, as his daughter. And the last thing our Father wants is some arrogant son or daughter who doesn't see the weight, the gravity, and the value of both programs and what He's going to do with them. And you know that there has to be a resolving of both these matters. That issue was known from Genesis. That you've got someone vying for the earth, you've got the earth up for grabs, the heavenly places up for grabs. And so you know from God's word in the Old Testament that that's got to be reconciled. The only issue is, He never once said how He was going to do it with the heavenly places. Never spoke about it. All right? Now when you see a warning like you do here, boast not against the branches, and one that leads to even more thoroughgoing warning down in verse 25, at this stage in your sonship orientation and your sonship establishment, what is one of the great, especially you got it in sonship orientation, warnings that your Father came along and wants you to become hypersensitive to, and it's found in those exhortations back there in Proverbs? What is the one hypersensitive issue you as his son, when you were newly adopted, learning about what sonship adoption was all about, that your Father wanted to be uppermost in your mind and wanted to see in you, and that you never ever wanted to be in his sight? A fool. That's right. Not to be a fool in your Father's eyes. Do you realize this admonition is, if you don't get this properly, that's exactly what you will be. If you don't have a grip and a proper, godly, biblical, dispensational mindset right now before the actual first day of instruction gets underway, if you don't have a healthy, godly mindset for being able to think dispensationally and on a whole the way your Father views it, you will be a fool in your Father's eyes. And that's one of the reasons why this issue of dispensational thinking has to be dealt with, why you've got three chapters dedicated to it, as the final issue in sonship establishment. Because if you're not thinking properly in connection with God's two programs, both programs, then any further education, any further instruction is pointless. It's worthless. You see that? Why? Because everything you're going to be educated in and taught by your father as your father's son has to do with entering into business with him. And his business with you has nothing to do with Israel or Israel's program. It has nothing to do with God's program with Israel. It hasn't got to do with the earthly program that he had for Israel. And if this doctrine doesn't get properly and effectually established in your heart at this point, turn out the lights. Class is over. Go home. I can't teach you. The instruction is pointless. It would be worthless. If you're boasting against the branches, as if God's program with Israel isn't important and the only thing on this earth is you that's important, or the boasting issue against the branches can also be understood and appreciated as not having a proper appreciation for God's dispensational change. That's how critical all this information is. The education is pointless, worthless, and over before it actually begins. If you don't get what chapter 9, chapter 10, chapter 11 sets forth properly, and you're not thinking dispensationally on a whole properly, the education is going to be pointless because there's many things in that education that isn't even in Israel's scriptures. There's goals, aims, and objectives that you're going to have to meet that aren't a part of Israel's program because and the vocational training that you're going to be going through isn't something they're going to go because they're going to be trained to do something different. You're going to be trained to do something totally different than them. And so that takes this doctrine out of the arena of being just so much Bible data. And I mean the whole issue of chapters 9, 10, and 11. It takes it out of the arena of being just a history lesson or Bible story time. And it should produce a deep appreciation for just how wise your father is to include such a large amount of information to finishing off your sonship establishment as Romans 9 through 11. And Christians today who have no dispensational understanding and appreciation, and I mean a proper one. I mean one in which you understand that Acts 2 wasn't the beginning of anything new, but that God did begin something new when he raised up and saved the Apostle Paul in Acts 9. Christians who have no dispensational appreciation or understanding, folks, there's no other way to put it. They're fools in their father's eyes. And knowingly or unknowingly, wittingly or unwittingly, any Christian today who reads themselves into Israel's program, don't boast against the branches. Those who read themselves or make themselves out to be assumers of Israel's program, let's use the word they would use, that they assume Israel's cut. Do you know how arrogant it is? How absolutely, spiritually arrogant it is for a saint, for a believer in Christ today to come along and say that God has covenanted with me. How arrogant. That's what boasting is. It's a spirit. It's an arrogant spirit. God hasn't covenanted with you. Who do you think you are? You're not Israel. He broke them all off. Grafted you in. He didn't covenant with you for anything. No, that's why you look at this thing and you say, my land, what mercy, what grace. Here's your thanksgiving. And most saints today, and I don't say this, I say this sadly, But when they think that their whole idea is to bring about Israel's fulfillment, whether it's making themselves assumers of them, their program or spiritual Israelites or whatever they do, whatever voodoo it is they do, and I know they're doing some. Because going home on Sunday, I was listening to the radio going home, and the woman preacher who was on there from the Presbyterian Church prayed all the way around the world. And I know God isn't in the miracle business today, because I know people were praying for her to shut up and she never did. Prayed this very eloquent prayer that only a clergy person could pray. And ended the whole thing, worked it right in beautifully, where we all should say, "Our Father," who, and then the whole church, you can just hear him chanting it, "Who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." That is arrogance. "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Have you never read Paul? They're trying to become the branches that God has broken off, and he's not even dealing with them. So again, you have fools who are actually dishonoring God by their lives. That's God dishonoring. Although I grant you, every indicator that they ever get will tell them otherwise. They will be told that they are holy and that they are of the cloth. And all this, and they have money, and they have, you know, they don't have, that woman has probably never, ever looked out at a sparse group like this. Always having people, always having Christmas cantatas, always having all of those things. Lots of people, lots of money, lots of get up and go. Every indicator. But of course, the indicator is all wrong. Because as Paul says, if you think, your thinking is wrong if you think gain is godliness. So I dwell on this just simply to bring out the fact that you don't want to be a fool in your Father's eyes, and you will be if you boast against the branches. You don't want to see it on either side of the spectrum, that is, that our program is better than Israel's, or that Israel's program is so great that we're assumers of it. Both of which is an arrogant thing to think. So the warning, boast not against the branches. In other words, don't look at Israel like you have the tendency to look at her. As if God has just thrown them away, got so fed up with them, and now taken up the Gentiles, and he's made them to be the helpers. We got to get the kingdom on earth, so we need some helpers. So God turned to the Gentiles as the helpers to get the kingdom. And then we all pray the Lord's Prayer. "Our Father who art in heaven," blah, 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 blah. As if that's what we're here for. No, we're not assumers of Israel's anything. As if in order to get the kingdom set up on the earth, God has to put the Gentiles, throw them into the mix. In order to get his will done on earth as it is in heaven. You know what Paul says to all that? God forbid you should think that. God forbid you should think that. Well, then he comes along in verse 18, the end of it, he says, "Boast not against the branches, but if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee." I love that verse, because especially that last sentence there, "But if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee." This is a technique of English grammar that sets forth a warning or an error, an erroneous thought, erroneous thinking. And then by just the use of that little comma and the statement that's made after that can come along and actually draw something to your mind that is information designed to correct the erroneous thought. "Boast not against the branches, but if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee." It's like saying, if you do boast against the branches, thinking God's done with Israel, he's gone out in search of a replacement, and he's come up with you Gentiles, I mean, that'd be worse than what, didn't they do that? I know they did that in baseball when the baseball went on strike. Didn't they do that in the NFL? Didn't the NFL strike once and they started looking for replacement players? That was awful. Heavens, I remember what happened in baseball when they went after replacement umpires. So, don't boast against the branches as if God's gone out and looked for a replacement, come up with you Gentiles, and now the Gentiles are better, they're greater than Israel, and God couldn't accomplish what he wanted to without you. He couldn't accomplish what he wanted to do with Israel, so he's going to accomplish it with us Gentiles. That's boasting against the branches. And things along those lines. If you boast against the branches, he comes along and says, just remember, you don't bear the root. The root bears you. And that corrects the erroneous thinking. Just remember, you're grafted into to a tree. You're held up. You're born by the root. The very same structure, the very same thing that provided the holy, acceptableness of Israel when they were grafted in there, before they were broken off, is now the very thing that makes it so that you're acceptable in God's sight. Just remember, the root bears you. You don't bear the root. We don't. In other words, I like the way Paul thinks. It's kind of like taking this tree and sticking it underground, and then you got the roots kind of sticking up. That's boasting, you know, like the tree's holding up the roots. No, the roots are holding you up. And it's that holy root that's the key to all of this being done. It's God's Jehovahness and God's grace and what he's done. And that's reflected in creating a nation like Israel out of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, through whom would come the Redeemer. So this is a great little English grammar technique here. If you boast against the branches, just remember, you don't bear the root. The root bears you. Oh, yeah. There's nothing that God was attracted to in you twice dead Gentiles. And nor was there anything naturally attractive about Israel. The real issue is that God himself is doing all the work, making all the provision, and it's him himself, he and what he's done. In other words, the thing that you are now to be suitably impressed with is the root. That's what you're impressed with. From which all holiness and all acceptable things in God's sight comes from. And again, this should cause you to appreciate some things about the general course of this world. And to be suitably unimpressed with it. Us Gentiles wound up as wild olive trees out here without God, without Christ, and the world estranged from the commonwealth of Israel. All of that kind of business. We followed the course of this world. Israel followed the course of this world. They wound up as broken branches up here. Every time, I don't care if it's God's people or if it's not God's people, every time you follow the course of this world, and there are more Christians today impressed with the course of this world, and you see it among conservatives in this country who are trying to revive the Enlightenment which darkened the Scriptures. Do you realize that the Enlightenment tried to destroy the Scriptures? It wasn't until the results of the end of this world. Even if you want to throw God in the mix, any God will do. You know, little debts like dippity-doo. Does anybody in here even remember dippity-doo? Come on. There, somebody. My sister used to use so much dippity-doo that I thought she owned stock in the company. A little dab will do you. Some kind of girlish 60s hair treatment stuff. It's God-awful. Yeah, glue, dippity-glue. My sister's poofy hair beehive hairdo in the 60s, I used to go up and knock on it. It was like knocking on aluminum. Bam, bam, bam. She could withstand a hurricane. Blow all of her clothes around, but her hair will come out perfect. Oh, anyway, how did we get off on dippity-doo? No, but it's the course of this world is so unimpressive in view of God's genius and what he's done, and that's what this admonition, this warning is about. If thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee. I'm not impressed with the course of this world or with any Christianized version of it. I can smell a Christianized course of this world of 1,000 miles off. And I'm not saying that boastfully. That's something that you begin to recognize as a son of your father. And it's not boasting if it's true. And that's just the matter of it. And you're not to be impressed with that, since and it had such a negative influence on both the Gentiles and upon Israel. And that's what you see illustrated in this thing. You see the negative influence of the course of this world upon Israel. You see the negative influence of it upon the Gentiles. And yet God still found a way to be able to graft you in so that he can begin, fulfill, and complete an entirely different program that he has in mind to accomplish while he has set Israel temporarily aside. Get that done. Return back to Israel. And on Sunday we'll talk about how he returns back to her, puts her back into the position she once held, so that he can finally take the two entities and bring this whole creation together. And that means that you should have a growing appreciation for the mercy of God in doing what he's done. And that's what you should be suitably impressed with. Paul was impressed with it. He talks there at the end, he can't hold it in. The depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and the knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. Now, the truth of the matter is, while you're not Israel, and Israel is not you, both Israel and you, both Israel and us Gentiles, we are both equal beneficiaries of the same root. So there's no room for boasting here. In fact, I probably shouldn't say this because I don't want you to start thinking about individual salvation or anything, but you got a pretty good dose of some of this generated in your thinking back in Romans 4. When I talk about beneficiaries of the same root, that you should be able to see your benefits from the root. Now, why would I say that? Romans 4 was about what? Saving faith. And who was the illustrative person about it? Abraham. So you should have gotten some appreciation for that there. And now even more when it comes to dispensational thinking. Well, we'll stop right there for tonight. We'll clear the decks for verse 19 and following. And we'll... Again, this is still in survey form, so actually we're going pretty quick. In the next few Bible classes, we're going to be done with chapter 11 in just a few more sessions. And so that means that we're coming up very rapidly on the time in which you're going to be asked to present your body as a living sacrifice. And we're going to do some review and maybe do some honest, interactive learning, or talking anyway, to be able to make sure that we are at least the core of the assembly on the same page, and that you're willing to do this to the degree that we can move forward. And so it is a very important event that is about to take place for our assembly. And so you need to just be thinking about that and make sure that you're clear. If you're not, we need to go back and maybe look at some things, or if you've got questions. But what I'm especially after is that you've got a healthy respect and effectual working of Romans 8:14 down to where we are now, and that's up and running. Somebody asked me if they needed to have every single thing God has ever said from Genesis 1 up and running. No, I'm not looking for that. But at least the minimum is that you do have an intelligent understanding of why you're presenting your body as a living sacrifice. And that's not just presenting it to your father. You're going to present it to your adversary as well. That we're going to begin moving into the next phase of our sonship life, and that's the instruction in godly wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. So that's all coming up, and it's very critical that you make an intelligent understanding and decision when you decide to do that. So, all right, we'll stop it right there, and we'll pick it up with verse 19 on